Hi, welcome to Christian Basics as we explore further in Lesson 10 on what the Bible teaches about suffering and persecution. The material is mostly written by Dr. Ed Rules, and I'm David Fettes, presenting that material with some additional thoughts of my own. Question 1. 2 Timothy 3 verse 12 says that all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Is this true for every believer? In some parts of the world, most Christians would immediately answer this question with a strong yes. In other parts of the world, many Christians would probably say no. In their own lives, they experience little or no obvious persecution and may even be rewarded in some ways because of their honesty, faithfulness to their spouses, friendliness, and hard work. In general, however, living openly and consistently for Christ will eventually arouse enmity or opposition of one kind or another. Christians may be mocked on occasion because they do not participate in certain activities or attend certain places of entertainment. They may also be ridiculed for their refusal to go along with the crowd in some of the group activities at school or at work. They may also be considered Bible fanatics if they talk to other people about the Bible or read the Bible during their lunch hour or free time. They may be called derogatory names because of their clean language, refusal to drink alcoholic beverages, or to gamble. They may be considered radicals because they attend church faithfully, observe a special day of the week as a day that's holy unto the Lord, give generously to their church or mission organizations, and participate in marches or promote pro-life activities or other Christian causes. Christians who never face any kind of obvious persecution or opposition may simply be living in a strong Christian environment. However, there may also be many situations where a Christian is not persecuted in any way because he or she is not pursuing a distinctively Christian lifestyle and therefore does not stand out in the crowd of unbelievers. If you live in a country where there's officially freedom of religion, then you may not face government persecution for your faith, but you may still face other kinds of persecution, perhaps from family members who do not follow the ways of the Lord. Or perhaps when you're in a setting where your friends want you to go to a drunken party, or where someone is trying to get you to do something you know to be wrong, then you're not being burned at the stake, but you are being persecuted or mocked or belittled for following the Lord. And if you never in your whole life have ever faced any kind of opposition for saying what is true or doing what is right, then you really do need to ask some pretty challenging questions. Question 2, can you give any personal examples of being persecuted because you are a Christian? If you are a Christian, think about times when you experienced trouble because of your faith. What was hardest about that? What blessings did you experience? I can remember a number of different occasions. I can remember just being in school or being with friends and being mocked because I didn't want to go and get drunk with some others. I can remember different type of persecution when I was traveling with a group that was evangelizing to a people group that didn't really like the gospel very much. And eggs were thrown at us. A fire hose was shot at us. Some of us were physically attacked by angry people. Other times, it wasn't necessarily just persecution as such for the faith, but I remember being in another country and driving back after a day of preaching in various villages and driving through the dark, and my driver was very concerned about somebody who was pursuing us behind and was concerned that they were going to try to attack us. I remember men with guns who were trying to break into the compound I was staying in while I was there. So there was a variety of reasons, and they may not have been actually trying to oppress us because they were Christians. They may have just wanted to attack us and rob us. But when you're in the course of doing Christ's work in difficult situations, sometimes you'll face that sort of thing. Sometimes it's very dangerous. Sometimes it may feel kind of mild if you just tell somebody about it. But if you're a kid at school trying to do the right thing, it can feel about like you're going to be burned at the stake if all of the people in the social group are going to mock you. So there are different levels of persecution at different stages of life and different situations. Think about ones that perhaps you have been through, and what was hard about it, what was scary about it, what God did to help you grow and make you bolder and closer to Him through it. If you seldom or never face difficulties for being a Christian, consider whether your lifestyle might not be much different from unbelievers, and whether you might not be sharing your faith or standing up for what's right. If you do not experience persecution, and the reason for that is because you live in a strong Christian environment, well, that's wonderful. If you're in a region where most people either are Christians or have high respect for Christian values, well, that may be great, but God might call you to step beyond that safe environment and get closer to the front lines of bringing God's kingdom into hostile territory. I know from my years of being on the radio, when you're speaking the gospel and speaking of Christian living with a whole bunch of people hearing in a whole bunch of different situations and religious backgrounds or no religion at all, I could get a lot of nasty things said to me and a lot of nasty things said about me because people disagreed with me so strongly. And if you bring the gospel to those who do not yet accept it, you are almost sure to run into some difficulty at some point. Question 3. Wouldn't it be much better for us if we never experienced any suffering or trials or persecution in our lives? Well, it might indeed be easier for us in some ways, but it would not necessarily be better. Persecution often strengthens our faith, helps us to examine our lives to see what is really most important in life, blesses us to know that others look up to us as sincere followers of Jesus, and challenges others to examine their own lives. Standing strong in the face of persecution increases our boldness to witness, brings glory and praise to God, it creates joy in our hearts, and it causes us to trust in the Lord rather than in our own abilities for provision, protection, and the things we need for daily living. So, it might be easier, but far from better, if our lives just always went exactly the way we wished they would. Question 4. Why would anyone think he's offering a service to God if he killed Christians? Because that's exactly what Jesus said in John 16, verse 2. A time is coming when anyone who kills you will think he's offering a service to God. Now, why would that be? Many non-Christians believe that Christians are deceiving people. They're teaching false things about God, or dishonoring God by teaching that Jesus is the eternal Son of God, and leading people into all kinds of heretical and false teachings that lead them away from God rather than to God. There are religions that deny that Jesus is the Son of God, or deny that Jesus is divine at all. Some religions deny that Jesus ever died and rose again, and they think that it's deadly to teach that, and so they oppose and sometimes even kill those who teach that. There are religions that deny there's any God at all. That religion, I guess you wouldn't call it religion, but I still think of it as a religion, is atheism. And communism was an atheistic religion where it worshipped its unbelief. And it oftentimes persecuted Christians and even killed Christians. There were Christians in Russia, priests who were nailed to the doors of their churches and then doused with water and left there to freeze outside in the worst times of the communist persecutions. In Albania, a communist country, the penalty officially, it wasn't just unofficial, the official penalty for being a Christian was death. By the way, that's the country that Mother Teresa, one of the most saintly Christians of the 20th century, came from. So even where Satan is doing his worst, God is raising up people of great devotion to Him. Now, remember that the Apostle Paul himself felt that way, that he'd be doing God a favor if he killed Christians, and therefore he hounded and persecuted believers. He even had Stephen killed, he had others imprisoned, he was trying to stamp out the Christian faith, and he thought he was doing it because God wanted him to. Even Jesus himself was crucified because the Jewish leaders accused him of blasphemy, a great sin against God, when he taught that he was the Son of God. Today, non-Christians in some countries believe that Christians are insulting God and spreading false teachings concerning Him. So they put Christians to death in their own minds and hearts. They sincerely believe that they're pleasing and serving God when they kill Christians. Some of them even have a doctrine that if you die in a war against a Christian country, you will automatically go to heaven. Question 5. Will those who suffer persecution in this life for Christ's sake receive greater glory and greater reward in heaven? If so, what will this glory or reward be like? The Bible does seem to teach that those who suffer persecution for Christ's sake will receive some kind of special reward in their future life. Read, for example, what Jesus says in Matthew 5, verse 11, or Luke 6, 22 and 23. He says, "Great will be your reward in heaven." However, the Bible doesn't explain specifically what this glory or crown or reward will be like. All believers will share in the glory and joy of being with Jesus for eternity, and this joy and glory will be far greater than anything any of us have ever experienced on earth. It's difficult to explain, therefore, how one person might have greater joy or blessing than another. There may well be some persons in heaven who will have special authority of one kind or another. But there will be no jealousy, pride, or envy of any kind. So if one person gets a greater reward than I do, I'm not going to be sitting there in heaven saying, "Oh, I wish that I was getting all those rewards." I'll just be glad that God is rewarding them and recognizing that God is rightly giving them a greater reward than He's giving me. Maybe one way to think of it would be in terms of military service. Let's say that you were in a very, very difficult battle and you were wounded. And you suffered much, but it turned out to be one of the key battles that was the turning point in preserving freedom and liberating people. And let's say somebody else rightly behaved nobly in the military, but they never were involved in any kind of conflict at all, were never in harm's way. They served for a number of years, and then they were released from the military. Now, they get together at some gathering celebrating the bravery of those who have served. Now, the person who served and never had to go into any difficult situation is honored, but the person who actually paid the higher price may feel that they were truly more deeply involved in that cause. And it may be so in heaven too, where God isn't necessarily going to heap greater riches or greater authority, though He might. That might be part of the reward, but maybe part of the reward is just knowing, I was there. I was part of the really intense action. And God counted me worthy to suffer greater things for the cause than some other people had to suffer. And now I'm rejoicing even more in God's victory than I otherwise might have. At any rate, whatever the reward is going to be, that's up to God. It's sufficient for us to know that the Bible has promised that the reward will be there, even if we can't fully understand what it will be like. Our greatest joy will not be our personal position or honor, but the blessing and privilege of spending eternity with Jesus in a world of perfect peace and delight. And there are many passages in the Bible that speak about that. Question 6. Believers often experience trials or suffering that are not directly related to persecution. Do you think these trials and sufferings will result in spiritual growth? Will they possibly also result in greater rewards in heaven? If so, do you think the reward will depend on how we respond to our trials in this life? The Bible may not give a specific answer to the question about future rewards in heaven, but it does clearly indicate that earthly afflictions often result in spiritual growth, even if those afflictions weren't directly persecution. In general, anything we do or any suffering we endure in a way that honors Christ will bring praise to Him and may possibly also result in some kind of special reward in heaven. However, our primary emphasis in all of this should not be on ourselves and our possible future rewards, but on Christ, who is the author and source of everything good in our lives. To Him belong the glory and honor and praise, both now and forever. Now, when we think about this question of suffering that's not directly persecution, we have to realize that sometimes suffering is persecution even when it's not. You say, well, that's kind of weird. Well, I want to point you back to the book of Job. In the book of Job, he suffered terrible physical illness. He lost his children to a terrible windstorm. He lost his property and many of those who worked for him to attacks from invaders who weren't persecuting him for being a follower of God, but were just pillaging and stealing and murdering. So it wasn't necessarily directly persecution, or was it? Because behind the scenes, behind all the humans doing that bad stuff, and behind the storm that destroyed the house where Job's children were, was Satan himself. And so sometimes, even if humans aren't persecuting us, the bad things that are coming at us may still be attacks from Satan that are directed at us because we love the Lord. Because Satan was angry, and he was trying to prove that Job wasn't really loyal to the Lord. Now, in all of that, it was persecution not at a human level, but persecution from Satan. But I want you to notice how it turned out. At the end of it all, after Job went through many questions and sufferings and even complaints to God, he said this: "I had heard of you, Lord, with the hearing of the ear, and now my eyes have seen you." Through all of that devastating stuff, when God showed up, it was enough for Job. And when we go through hardships, whether they're persecution from enemy humans that we know of, whether it's behind the scenes persecution from Satan and other hardships that come into our life, God's ultimate purpose in the life of the believer is what we once heard will now enter more fully into our experience, that we will be drawn closer to God and closer to Jesus in the fellowship of His suffering and in the fellowship of His resurrection. Question 7. Can you think of any examples in your own life or in the life of someone you know in which trials and persecution resulted in spiritual blessings already in this life? Well, hardship is meant for our good. And that's not just theory, not just words, it's reality. So reflect on your own experience and recall testimonies from others, paying close attention to ways that God has brought blessings through troubles. I've mentioned seeing dying people giving their testimony to the Lord. I've been involved in prison ministry, and I've heard from people who said, "Thank God for prison, because it's there that I finally realize how stupid I've been and how rotten my life is becoming." And that's where I cried out to the Lord. I remember someone saying, actually, prison saved my life, because he was on a road that was just totally self-destructive in drugs and wickedness. And in prison, he came to his senses. And so there are many different circumstances in which people who were far from the Lord have been drawn to him through their afflictions. And those who were already followers of Jesus have been drawn closer to him. I pray that that's true of you. Sometimes the very hardest things, the most painful things, can at the same time be the moments when we are closest to God. Maybe the very hardest time in my life, at least thus far, was when I held my daughter in my arms and watched her die. That was the hardest, probably, thing that's ever happened to me, and the time when I felt closest to heaven in all of my life. And so, I don't know what sufferings you've been through, but I do encourage you and invite you, just reflect. Were the hard times just a waste? Were they nothing but misery and pain? Or was God there? And did you draw closer to Him through those things? Question 8. How should we respond to persons who treat us unfairly simply because we're Christians? We should definitely not return evil for evil. Nor should we immediately try to find weaknesses or failures in another person's life and focus on those in order to take the pressure off ourselves. We say, "Oh, those persecutors are so bad, I'm so mad at them, and I can find all kinds of things to criticize about them." Well, maybe so. But you don't need to do that. Just face what needs changing in your own life, ask the Lord to help you keep growing and changing, and then pray for those who pick on you. If it's possible for you to discuss your faith openly and calmly with someone who's treating you unfairly, prayerfully take advantage of that opportunity. Most often, however, that probably won't be possible. Depending on your situation and circumstances, it might be possible to discuss your situation with a person of authority who can help you find an amicable solution to your situation. And if you're being attacked in a country where assault is illegal, then you can go to the authorities. The Apostle Paul was a Roman citizen, and when he was unlawfully beaten, he said, "Did you know I'm a Roman citizen? You better not do that again. You better not do that to any other Roman citizens in this town." So he was willing to appeal to authority and say, "Hey, I've got my rights as a citizen in this land." And And so too, I know of Christians who run into persecution, a particular group of people witnessing, and they face death threats and attacks, and they said, we never fight back. But sometimes if somebody prosecutes, if somebody actually punches us and attacks us, we'll prosecute them under the law. We'll have them arrested because they're breaking the law and committing a crime. So they don't punch back themselves, but if somebody is breaking the law, then they're held accountable to the law of the land. So prayerfully take advantage of what opportunity you can where there are people in authority to help you without doing unnecessary harm to yourself or to others who may be involved. Also, in the spirit of Christ, you should seek to return good for evil and pray for the person or persons involved. You may possibly be able to quietly do something helpful and positive for somebody who's treating you poorly. You have opportunities to be kind to somebody, and oftentimes that will shatter their heart and win them over, but not always. It's important to remember that you, like Jesus himself, will not necessarily be well received by others no matter what you do. In that situation, simply commend the entire matter to the Lord and patiently and prayerfully wait for his leading and his guidance. Question 9. How is your prayer life affected when you pray for healing or freedom from trials and persecution, but God does not heal you or keep you from being persecuted? Well, this is a very challenging question that each of us must deal with personally. Throughout history, many believers who prayed sincerely were not healed, and many Christians who prayed sincerely were not spared from persecution or death. Both the Bible itself and the history of the church demonstrate that. One of the clearest examples of that is right in Acts chapter 12. The Apostle James is arrested by Herod just to please a political constituency, and James's head is chopped off. Then Peter is arrested, and Herod is intending to do the same thing to him, but the church is praying for Peter, and Peter is rescued by an angel and set free. Now, they prayed in both cases, but one died, the other lived, and we do not know why. We know that God has his purposes, and also that we can't always figure them out. Believers should recognize, however, that God promises that he will never leave or forsake his people. James, when his head was chopped off, went straight to be with Jesus in heaven. Stephen, when he was pelted with rocks, went straight to be with Jesus in heaven. And the Lord will bring glory to those who die, either from sickness or from persecution or in any other way. We should not behave as though God has failed us if we die. We believe in the one who conquered death. We believe that to be absent from the body is to be at home with the Lord. So let's not pretend that it's this terrible defeat when our prayer for deliverance or healing is not answered, but when instead we or someone we love is taken to be directly with the Lord. God's purposes are sometimes accomplished most powerfully by those who remain faithful even when they are not healed or delivered. I remember the story of a missionary who told people the power of prayer in the village that he was trying to reach, and hardly any of them were Christians. And then he was asked to pray for a particular child who was very sick, and he prayed and he prayed. He said, Lord, please let this child live. Please let this child live so they can see that you're the healer and that they'll come to you as Savior. And he prayed and he prayed, and the child died. And shortly after that, the whole village came to faith in Jesus Christ, because they said, well, we've seen that when you Christians prayed for a child and it died, you still loved your Lord, and that must be a wonderful Lord when you keep loving him even when you don't always get what you wanted. They said they're used to sorcerers and magicians who sometimes get for people what they want by whatever methods, but it was the death of that child and not the healing of that child that brought them to the Lord. Now, the Lord knows each situation, and so we've got to entrust ourselves to his care even when it's heartbreaking, even when our minds are utterly at a loss to figure out what's going on. Since the ultimate goal in our lives is that God may be glorified through us, we should continue to trust in the Lord while also continuing to pray. Hebrews 11 speaks of many victories. It says, by faith, the heroes of faith won many victories. And it goes on in that vein for quite a while. But then, later in the chapter, it says, well, some were sawed in two. Some were fed to wild animals. Some were exiled and lived in caves, and they were seeking a better resurrection. So, you read of these victories, but it also refers to many people who suffered greatly and did not receive a victory in this life, but received greater reward in the resurrection. So remember, Jesus himself also prayed earnestly for a way to avoid his death on the cross, but God conquered sin through Jesus' death, rather than sparing Jesus from death. God's ultimate purposes will surely be accomplished, though faithful followers of Jesus may have to suffer much from sickness, trials, poverty, or persecution. But through it all, God will be glorified, and in one way or another, all those who trust in him will also ultimately share in his glory. Question 10. In what ways would you be different if you were never sick or injured or in pain? Do you think you'd be more fruitful, more joyful, and a better witness if everything in life went the way you wanted? Give the reasons for your answer. Well, that's a question that only you can answer. Most of us, though, have to admit that we can be pretty grumpy and discontented even when we're healthy and when most things are going well for us. Let's face it. We're not always content and happy just because everything seems to be going well. We can always think of one more thing we want, or actually a lot more things we want. On the other hand, most of us recognize that our minds were most focused on God and our faith was exercised most strongly when we faced difficulties that we could not handle in our own strength. A great many Christians testify that their greatest spiritual growth occurred when they went through hard times. And so if you're going through hard times, don't be discouraged. If you're somebody who has just become a Christian recently and you're worried about the hard times that you might face from your family, from some friends or associates, or in your work, do not be afraid. Trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. There may be a price to pay for following him, but there is a tremendous reward to be gained as you suffer with your Lord, in order that you may also be glorified with your Lord.